Chapter 5. Reacher woke at 6, took a long, cold shower because the room was hot, but his shirt was dry. It was as stiff as a board, and still the right size. There was no room service. He went out for breakfast. The roads were full of trucks, hauling gravel, hauling fill, mixing concrete, feeding the work zone's appetites. He dodged them and walked south toward the waterfront, through the gentrification frontier. He found a working man's diner with a basic menu. He drank coffee and ate eggs. He sat at a window and watched the street for aimless doorway lurkers or men in parked cars, because if he had been followed the night before, it was logical to assume he would be followed again. So he kept his eyes open, but he saw nobody. Then he walked the length of First Street, north. The sun was up on his right. He used store windows as mirrors and watched his back. Plenty of people were going his way, but none of them was following him. He guessed whoever it was would be waiting for him in the plaza, ready to confirm what he expected to see. The witness went to the lawyer's office. The fountain was still going. The pool was nearly half full. The tributes were still there, neatly lined up, another day older, a little more faded, a little more wilted. He figured they would be there for a week or so, until after the last of the funerals. Then they would be removed, discreetly, maybe in the middle of the night, and the city would move on to the next thing. He sat for a moment on the NBC monolith with his back to the tower, like a guy wasting time because he was early, which he was. It was only 7:45. There were other people in the same situation. They stood around, singly or in groups of two or three, smoking last cigarettes, reading the morning news, chilling before the daily grind. Reacher looked first at men on their own with newspapers. That was a pretty traditional surveillance cover. Although in his opinion it was due for replacement with a new exiled smoker cover, guys standing near doorways and smoking were the new invisibles, or guys on cell phones. You could stand there with a Nokia up to your ear forever, and nobody thought twice. In the end, he settled on a guy who was smoking and talking on a cell phone. He was a short man of about 60, maybe more, a damaged man. There was a permanent, lopsided tension in the way he held himself. An old spinal injury, maybe, or busted ribs that had been badly set years ago. Whatever it was, it made him look uncomfortable and querulous. He wasn't the type of guy who would happily converse at length. But there he was, on his phone, just talking, aimlessly. He had thin, gray hair, recently barbered, but not stylishly. He was in a double-breasted suit that had been expensively tailored, but not in the United States. It was square and boxy, too heavy for the weather. Polish, maybe. Or Hungarian. Eastern European, certainly. His face was pale and his eyes were dark. They didn't glance Reacher's way, even once. Reacher checked his watch. 7:55. He slid off the shiny granite and walked into the tower's lobby. Grigor Linsky stopped pretending and dialed an actual number on his phone. "He's here. He just went up."
"Did he see you?"
the Zek asked. "Yes, I'm sure he did."
"So make that their last time. Now you stay in the shadows."
Reacher found Helen Roden already at her desk. She looked settled in, like she had been there a long time already. She was in the same black suit, but her shirt was different. It was a simple scoop neck, not tight. It was china blue and matched her eyes, exactly. Her hair was tied back in a long ponytail. Her desk was covered with legal books. Some were face down, some were face up. They were all open. She had about 8 pages of notes going on a yellow legal pad. References, case notes, decisions, precedents.
"James Barr is conscious," she said. "Rosemary called me at 5 this morning."
"Is he talking?"
"Only to the doctors. They won't let anyone else near him yet, not even Rosemary herself."
"What about the cops?"
"They're waiting, but I'll need to be there first. I can't let him talk to the cops without representation."
"What is he saying to the doctors?"
"That he doesn't know why he's there. That he doesn't remember anything about Friday. The doctors say that's to be expected. Amnesia is predictable with head injuries, possibly covering several days before the trauma, several weeks, sometimes.
Where does that leave you?
With two big problems. First, he might be faking the amnesia, and that's actually very hard to test, either way. So now I'm going to have to find a specialist opinion on that, too. And if he isn't faking, we're in a real gray area. If he's sane now, and he was sane before, but he's missing a week, then how can he get a fair trial? He won't be able to participate in his own defense, not if he hasn't got the slightest idea what anyone is talking about. And the state put him in that position. They let him get hurt. It was their jail. They can't do that and then go ahead and try him.
What's your father going to think?
He's going to fight it, tooth and nail, obviously. No prosecutor can afford to admit the possibility that amnesia might screw up a trial. Otherwise, everyone would jump right on it. Everyone would be looking to get beat up in pretrial detention. Suddenly, nobody would be able to remember anything.
It must have happened before.
Helen nodded. It has.
So what did the law book say?
I'm reading from them now, as you can see. Dusky versus the United States. Wilson versus the United States.
And?
There are lots of ifs and buts.
Reacher said nothing. Helen looked straight at him.
It's spinning out of control. Now there'll be a trial about a trial. It's something that might need to go all the way to the Supreme Court. I'm not equipped for that. And I don't want that. I don't want to be the lawyer who gets people off on weird technicalities. That's not who I am. And it's a label I can't afford right now.
So plead him guilty and the hell with it.
When you called me last night, I thought you were going to walk in here this morning and tell me he's innocent.
Dream on. She looked away. But she looked back.
There's a but?
He nodded. Unfortunately.
What's the but?
He's not quite as guilty as I thought he was.
How?
Get your car, and I'll show you. They rode down together to a tenants-only underground parking garage. There were NBC broadcast trucks in there, and cars, and pickups, and SUVs of various makes and vintages. There was a new blue Mustang convertible with an NBC sticker in the windshield. Anne Yanny's, probably, Reacher thought. It was right for her. She would drive top down on her days off and top up during the work week to keep her hair okay for the cameras. Maybe she used a lot of spray. Helen Roden's ride was a small, dark green sedan, so anonymous Reacher didn't know what it was. It was a Saturn, maybe. It was unwashed and not new. It was a graduate student's car, the sort of thing a person uses until a first salary kicks in and lease payments become affordable. Reacher knew all about lease payments. Baseball on the TV carried a lot of commercials, every half inning and every call to the bullpen.
Where are we going?
Helen asked. South. He racked his seat back and crunched a whole lot of stuff in the footwell behind him. She had her seat close to the wheel, even though she wasn't a short woman. He ended up looking at her, more or less from behind.
What do you know?
She asked. It's not what I know. It's what James Barr knows.
About what?
About me. She came up out of the garage and started south down a street parallel with First. 8 o'clock in the morning, the rush hour traffic was still heavy, going the opposite way from the afternoon rush, she guessed.
What does James Barr know about you?
Something that made him want me here.
He ought to hate you.
I'm sure he does, but he still wanted me here. She crawled south toward the river. He never met me before, never saw me again afterward. We knew each other for 3 weeks, more than 14 years ago.
He knew you as an investigator, someone who broke a tough case.
A case he thought couldn't be broken. He watched me do it every step of the way. He had a front row seat. He thought I was an investigative genius.
That's why he wanted you here?
Reacher nodded. I spent last night trying to live up to his opinion. They crossed the river on a long iron trestle. The sun was on their left, the wharf was on their right. The slow gray water moved listlessly past it. Go west now. She made a right and took a two-lane county road. There were bait stores on the riverbank and shacks selling barbecue and beer and crushed ice.
But this case was already broken. He knew that.
This case was only halfway broken. That's what he knew.
Halfway?
Reacher nodded, even though he was behind her. There's more to this case than Emerson saw. Barr wanted someone else to understand that, but his first lawyer was lazy. He wasn't very interested. That's why Barr got so frustrated.
What more is there?
I'll show you.
A lot?
I think so.
So why didn't he just lay out the facts, whatever they are?
Because he couldn't. And because nobody would have believed him anyway.
Why? What the hell happened here?
There was a highway cloverleaf ahead, just like he had hoped. I'll show you. Take the highway north. She powered the little car through the ramp and merged with the traffic. There was a mixed stream flowing north, 18-wheelers, panel trucks, pickups, cars. The road recrossed the river on a concrete bridge. The wharf was visible to the east, in the distance. The city center was ahead, on the right. The highway rose gently on its stilts. Helen drove onward with the roofs of low, edge-of-town buildings flashing past on the left and the right. Be ready to take this spur that runs behind the library, Reacher said. It was going to be a right exit. It was announced well in advance with a sign. The broken line separating the right lane from the center lane became a solid line. Then the solid line became a narrow wedge. The through traffic was forced away to the left, the exit lane angled slightly right. They stayed in it. The wedge grew wider and was filled in with bold, cross-hatched lines. Up ahead were yellow drums. They passed them by, onto the spur that would lead behind the library. Reacher twisted in his seat and checked the rear window. Nobody behind them. Go slow. 200 yards ahead, the spur started to curve. Behind the library, behind the black glass tower. The roadbed was wide enough for two lanes, but the radius was too tight to make it safe for two lanes to run side by side at high speed into the corner. Traffic engineers had thought better of it. They had advised a gentler trajectory. They had marked out a single lane through the curve. It was a little wider than a normal lane to allow for misjudgments. It started way on the left and then swung sharply to the right and cut across the apex of the curve at a more shallow angle. Go real slow now, Reacher said. The car slowed. Way up ahead of them on the left was a crescent moon shape of white cross-hatching. Beginning right next to them on the right was a long, thin triangle of white cross-hatching, just lines of paint on the blacktop, but they shepherded people along and kept them safe. Pull over, Reacher said. Here on the right.
Can't stop here, Helen said.
Like you had a flat. Just pull over, right here. She braked hard and turned the wheel and steered onto the cross-hatched no-man's land on their right. They felt the thick painted lines thumping under the tires, a juddery little rhythm. It slowed as she slowed. She stopped. Back up a little. She backed up like she was parallel parking against the concrete parapet. Now forward a yard. She drove forward a yard. Okay. He wound his window down. The traffic lane on their left was clear and smooth, but the cross-hatched no-man's land they were stopped on was covered with grit and trash and debris blown across it by years of passing vehicles. There were cans and bottles and detached mud flaps and tiny cubes of broken headlight glass and plastic splinters from old fender benders. Far away to the left, the through traffic rumbled north on a separate bridge. There was a constant stream over there. But they sat for a whole minute before anyone else came the way they had taken. A lone pickup passed close on their left and rocked them with its slipstream. Then the spur went quiet again. Not busy, Reacher said.
It never is. This doesn't really go anywhere people need to get. It was a total waste of money. But I guess they've always got to be building something.
Look down. The highway was raised up on tall stilts. The roadbed was maybe 40 feet above ground level. The parapet wall was 3 feet high. Beyond it, ahead and to their right, was the upper story of the library building.
It had an intricate cornice, carved from limestone, and a slate roof. It felt close enough to touch.
What? Helen asked.
Reacher pointed with his thumb and then leaned way back so she could see across him. Directly to their right was an unobstructed view down into the plaza, with a perfectly straight line of sight along the narrow bottleneck between the end of the ornamental pool and the plaza wall. And beyond it, dead ahead, perfectly aligned, was the door of the DMV office.